Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do in the workshop. You're going to work, first of all. Secondly, we'll try to laugh a little bit. We'll try to get the business tended to and try to impart vision. And to be honest with you, I'm nervous about it. Can't pray.
Father, we thank you for Willis, and we thank you for his life. We thank you for what you've done for a guy in a small community where most of us would think you can't work, and certainly not through us who are not equipped to do the things that you call us to do. And yet Willis has done that. And Lord, I thank you for his friendship and for his example, the encouragement that he's been to my life and a lot of the guys in this room. And I would just pray that you might give him peace that was talked about this morning. Lord, we know that you answer prayer specifically, and I would pray that you might use the Spirit of God and the Word of God and the experiences that you've given him to share with us, that we might be helped in our ministries where we are. I would pray that you might empower him, that you might let him do beyond what his competence is even to do, because he would rely totally upon you. And so we would ask that you would just speak through him and use him as your instrument, as your vehicle to work into our lives. And we thank you for what you're going to do, and for not only this session, Lord, but that we would see a reproduction and fruit in each one of us as men's life in this room, that we might gain one or two things that we could take back specifically to the ministry that we have in our area. So we would just ask for you to use this time and use him exceedingly abundantly above, Lord, even what we think and certainly what he thinks, that your power might be shown through him. In Christ's name we pray.
Amen.
Well, I want to impart this morning and to talk about is not as much methodology as it may be vision. And while I may use the word I too many times, it has been a we. What has been accomplished in Marietta is not of my doing, but because of a lot of guys who have a genuine concern for men. And all I want to share with you is a philosophy in which we minister. And I think to best do that, probably I ought to share with you, first of all, what has happened. Then we'll talk about how it happened and what the philosophy is behind it. And I truly am going to let you work, because I think part of what we're going to do in this workshop gives you the basis on which to make some decisions about what you wish to do. I live in a town of 2,500 in a county of about 8,000. And what has been done there in the way of a men's ministry, while it is effective in small communities, can be done in any community, in any setting, in any group of people, we believe. And it's not unique to us. I had the opportunity to go to Chip McWilliams Church and speak, and I saw what they had done in that church, and it's church specific. And then we came home, and I had looked at a bunch of other things, and through a process, we came to a determination about what might be doable in Marietta. And Russ, why don't you see those guys get some handouts? And what, first of all, let me just give you the background. Some of our guys went to Promise Keepers, and Kent and I have had a little involvement with Promise Keepers, and understand it, have been around it a little bit, and had the opportunity to have a little ministry through Promise Keepers. And so our guys went off, and I really wasn't with them. They had me off doing something else, but the guys came back, and they kept talking about the fact that we need to do something to back up, to come in behind Promise Keepers. We need a men's organization. We need to have a men's meeting. And we talked about it, and as like you guys have probably done, we talked that thing to death. You know, about twice a week, about once a week, somebody'd bring it up, and we'd talk about it. And finally, this guy that's in our church came to me and he said, Willis, he had the burden. He said, Willis, we need to do that men's deal. And I said, well, Brian, I think it's time we either shut up or do it. We talked about it and talked about it. And he said, well, how are we going to do it? And I said, I don't know. You go pray and I'll pray and we'll talk to some guys. And what we did, we talked to about six or eight guys that had the burden and who were willing to be a part of it. And never had a committee meeting. We just would talk about it and kind of came to some conclusions about how we would do it. And here's what happened. We decided that we wanted to have a men's meeting that would cross denominational lines one Saturday morning a week, I mean a month rather, one Saturday morning a month, and that we would do our best to structure it so that it had a chance to succeed. And what has happened out of it is we have a men's group that the attendance ranges, now remember the size of the town, it ranges from 50 to 90 guys. And what we have done, we have 139 guys out of our community on our mailing list and who have attended at one time or another. That's pretty good reach. We have had 20 different churches represented. Now, we started in January of 96 and then quit during the summer. We had 20 churches represented, and we have had as many as 14 pastors attend. And if that, I just say that that's it. Now, included in our group of people, we're reaching the guy who has nothing, who's struggling, but we also have the superintendent of schools. We have the associate district judge who attends regularly. We have some black guys. And if you guys are not aware of it, it is difficult to attract black guys to a white, predominantly white meeting in small community town. We knew some guys that were black that we loved and we thought we could relate to. Our black churches are represented. We have a black preacher who attends. And we've got some guys who've been involved in Walk to Emmaus. Got some guys that have been involved in PK. And some guys in different churches. We have among our group the Charismatics. We have among our group it's just a cross section, denominationally cross section of people. And what I would like to share with you is sort of the process that we went through to come to some of our conclusions. And rather than me tell you what our goals and objectives were and are, I want us to take about 5 minutes and I want you to let me set the premise. I want you to visualize your community however you see it. Your sphere of influence. Your Christian friends. And let's visualize that you're going to do a ministry with these people. And I want you to take that handout and write down what your goals for that ministry would be. I am not going to tell you what ours were because I'm not going to give you a head start. I am not going to help you guys cheat. So I'm going to take about 5 minutes by the clock and I want you to think through what your goals would be if you were going to do this ministry. And I believe it will work whether we're talking about in a small community or a large community. It may not, but that's your decision. So let's take about 5 minutes and you take your handout on page one and you write down what your goals are. If you were going to have a community-wide ministry of the nature we have just discussed, you write down what your goals are for that ministry. Well, you've had enough time to think about it. I hope it puts your mind going in the direction which, you know, we're trying to go, where we're all going the same direction. Let me share with you what our goals were, and this is knowing I did basically what you guys have done. I wrote the handout, knew basically what I wanted to say, and then I filled in the blanks on the handout like I'm going to ask you to do. Here's, in no particular order, here were the goals as we analyzed and looked at our community. One was to promote the communication between Christians and men in various churches. One was to impart a vision of discipleship to encourage personal spiritual growth, to encourage men to take an active part in their own church. And then this last one, you might need to think about this just a minute. And it may have been the core of what we wanted to do. We wanted to create an environment where you could bring a guy who wouldn't darken the door of a church to hear Jesus Christ lifted up. Now, as you know, there are many guys who spend a lot of time inviting people to come to their church. There are many people who would not darken the door of the church because of some bad relationship, something that's working in their head. So the core of what we did was to set a set of priorities or goals and then develop a ministry plan to meet those goals. And that last one has a lot to do with what we did. Now, somebody quote for me Proverbs 27:17.
Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another.
That's the verse. That's the verse we wanted to jump onto. Ecclesiastes 4:9-10.
Two are better than one, for they have a good return for their labor. Either of them falls, one will lift up his companion. But woe to the man who falls, and there's not another to lift him up.
Okay, the operative word in that is falls. You think about that verse. Because as it has often been said, the Christian army is the only one who shoots its wounded. And we wanted to create an environment where the wounded felt comfortable and where they could be comforted and where they could find healing. We then fought the question of church ministry versus community ministry and came to the conclusion that you cannot do both. You cannot have that thing church specific and community wide because of the barriers that there already are between churches and denominations. And we determined that what we would do was we would try to create an in this environment we talked about based on this premise, that rather than being a sanctuary for saints, it would be a spiritual hospital for those who had need. Out of that, we then, and I'm going through the process, out of that, we then began to look at our resources and say, what do we have? Well, first of all, in the area of manpower, do we have enough guys? And we came to the conclusion it doesn't take many. It takes two or three, four or five, who are committed and who want to do it. How about money? Boy, that's a biggie. We got to go raise a bunch of money, right? Nah, it doesn't take much money. The thing is, though, we asked the guys who had the burden to put up the money for the first one. It's kind of interesting how this money deal worked out. We had a half dozen guys who said, we'll underwrite the first meeting. And at the first meeting, we laid out the premise. And the premise that I'm laying out with you is basically what we told them. How about facility? Everybody came to us who heard about us wanting to do it and said, you guys need to have it at the First Baptist Church in Marietta. They've got that good-looking kitchen. They've got that big room. It's got carpet. It is ideal. And we said, yeah, it is, but we're not going there. No church. What we did, we found in the local rural electric co-op a community room, a site neutral. Interesting thing happened. We have the first meeting. 75 guys show up. Parked clear out of the REA parking lot out onto the highway. And half the guys in town are going out to feed their cattle. What in the world is going on down to REA? They're having a meeting? Are they trying to throw somebody out? What's going on down there? And the word began to spread. You know, that happens in a small town. Big towns probably wouldn't happen. Small towns, happens. Part of the deal. Well, We went to the REA. Sir?
How many people you really thought might be at the first meeting?
We were hoping for 25. We only had 78, 76, something like that. I don't get in that counting deal much anymore.
What's the REA?
It's a rural electric co-op. It would work in any room. Your local hospital probably has a community room. Your local co-op has a community room. Our local little old library's got a community room. You know, and we just happened to hit on a good deal. You know what the guys at REA said to pay for it? Said, if you guys will turn it on, turn on the lights and turn off the lights and not leave a whole bunch of trash, it's yours. Use it. That's pretty cheap. Yeah, some restaurants do it. The problem with a restaurant is you get into the other problem I'm going to talk about, but it will work in a restaurant. Libraries, there are more community meeting rooms than you guys will probably realize if you get out and get to look at. And most banks have them. Yeah. Don't want to get off on that, but. Okay, the next part of our process in terms of how we're going to do it is we looked at the mistakes that other people had made. We knew of some other things that had been attempted along this line, and we tried to analyze the mistakes that they had made. One of them was, and frankly, we had had a previous failure. I mean, we had one as big-time failure. And so we came to the conclusion that we would look at that. One of them was the one I talked about. They were too denominationally specific. That was one of the failures that we had seen.
Elaborate on that, would you?
Well, if you're not careful, something will get if you're trying to remember that the goal is community-wide ministry, and what happened was they get identified with the Baptist Church or the Methodist Church or the Catholics or all of this other stuff, see? And that gets to be a side issue, which you don't need to have to drag down the street with you. You know, you don't need that encumbrance. So we tried, and there's another part of this that y'all are going to laugh when I tell you some of the other stuff we did that's kind of off the wall, but that's part of the deal.
Well, let's back up for a moment, and after you, in terms of your goals and objectives, after the promotion of communication, et cetera, vision for disciple making, what was the third thing you have after a vision for disciple making?
Encourage personal spiritual growth. Okay. Yeah.
Well, so what can you do in the foundation to keep it from leaning towards denominationally specific? Like a board of directors makeup, things like that. How do you
guys, let me go all the way through it. I got that one in there too. And all of these questions that you guys think you've got, I'm not going to answer them, but we're going to talk about it later. Here's my supervisor. He's counting. It's okay. The other thing that we've determined was that in previous attempts, we had put too much time and energy and money into food and had made food the focus instead of the fellowship. So we tried to simplify the food. I'm given to a loose organizational structure, and the one before we had not had enough organizational structure in the meeting itself. We had allowed it to be too loose, and we'll talk about that in some detail. The other thing we determined was that we would have no political or social agenda. Now, I mean zero. No political or social agenda. We had also seen some other organizations that had had too many committees. They spent all of their energy working on committees. And here's what happened. If you're not careful and if you have too much organization, structure, the people rely on the structure instead of each other. And what we did was we tried to create a ministry where everybody shared equal responsibility for its success or its failure. In other words, there was no leader that they could blame if it failed.
What do you call social agenda?
We're going to go picket the local abortion clinic. We're going to go down to Gainesville, where they've just put in an adult bookstore, and we're going to stand out there with our placards in that area. Good question.
What about the fix-up stuff that was spawned by Bromsky, you know, fix
elderly ladies' homes and all that. You need to keep that out.
We want that out of it. We want to share that vision, but we want them to go back and do that by church, by individual group. Yeah. I think we came to the conclusion of that a lot of people spend a lot of time raising money for these groups. We weren't going to do that. And the other thing was they'd spend an awful lot of time worrying about who's going to get credit. Well, over on the next page where we talk about organization, we came to the conclusion that we would have no leader. No elected leader, because then you get into a deal of campaigning and splitting up sides, trying to determine who was going to lead it. So we kind of lead that thing by committee. We'd have three or four key guys who don't have committees but just have responsibility, and then they'd just gather up some folks to help them. And I know that this is way too loose for most of you. But what their job is one of the guys takes care of the mailing list. One of the fellows takes care of the food, and another guy takes care of the cleanup. Got a guy that comes down that had never done anything before, and his job is to come down at 6 o'clock and make coffee. You cannot imagine the impact that him having that responsibility has made in his life. And then it's the little things. It's the things we don't think about. We have people in our communities who are crying to be used of God in the context of their gift and their ability. Not in context of my gift or Jerry's gift or John Taylor's gift or Russ or Kirk and Kent, but in the context of their own gift. And I believe God gifted men to handle the chairs at this thing here, just like he gifts Lauren Sandy. I don't get off on that. Leadership. We had no committees, no elected leader, and here's the conclusion we came to. Because, you know, that elected leader deal, that leadership deal gets down to who gets the credit. So what we came to this determination. If it goes well, God's going to get the credit. If it gets screwed up, it's us. Simple. We're going to create an environment where God can work. If it works well, he's going to get the credit. If it gets messed up, we did it because we got to looking ourselves.
It's in the organization that somebody has to direct what's going on.
Oh, they got a leader. He's more like a dictator. All right, here's what we did about the money. We had the six guys who had the burden. We decided we'd underwrite the first one. And when we got together, the guys together to share the vision, which is basically what I'm doing with you, is we told them, now, from this day on, we will never discuss money again. God's work never wants for God's money. And what we determined was we would never discuss money again. The first one was underwritten. In the future, if the basket was out when they went through to pick up their food, if God had blessed them, give. If that deal was blessing them, give. If not, it was okay. And then we told them, if one of you guys is having a hard time and you need some money, there's some money in the basket, you go ahead and take it. God will take care of that. You know what we've had? We've had just enough money. We don't have a bank account. We keep it in a brown envelope in a file box. We keep the receipts. We keep the money in a brown envelope. We pay for what we need to pay for with cash. Don't tell the IRS. Commitment. Everyone has an equal responsibility to invite. Up front. Everyone comes by personal invitation. We only advertised it one time, and that was after we were pressured to. Everybody comes by personal invitation. It's life kissing off life. You see, we want to instill in those people the idea that it is our ministry. It is not their ministry. It's our ministry. Speakers. After discussing it and talking about it, we set down a rather rigorous set of rules for our speakers. We wanted no big names. We did not particularly want big bucks. We did not want professionals. We wanted common men who were walking the walk, who were living the life, and who we could put up in front and say, here is an example. You see, the problem is that we have a problem. Men have a problem relating to somebody who they believe is superior to them spiritually or in intellect or in something else. So we have run through a bunch of what I consider to be rather common guys. They're all working for a living. And they're all ministering in addition to their work.
Are you talking about local men?
No, we out of town. We invited some guys, and I'll read you the list a little while, a bunch of duds, but they're pretty good guys. They're all my friends, at least they were until they hear this tape. We pay no honorarium. We give them a night in a motel, take them out to dinner, them and their wives out to dinner, take a guy or two, a couple other couples to go with them so they'll get a chance to get their lives, kiss off their lives over the dinner table, and thank them, hug their neck, shake their hand, and send them home. See, we're trying to run a low-budget operation. Time, I think, is the most critical issue of the whole thing, is time. We meet between 7 and 8:30. We're in a generation, in a world, where everybody is terribly time-sensitive, and we determined that one of the problems we had had before was that we had allowed some of our speakers, who were good friends of mine, to run. And what happened was we had guys who could not then make their other commitments because the program did not end on time. And we made a guarantee the first meeting. We guaranteed them that we would start at 7 o'clock and they would walk out of that door at 8:30, come hell or high water.
Is this morning or evening?
It's morning. Yeah, morning.
Monday morning?
No, it's Saturday morning.
Oh, Saturday.
Yeah. And we guarantee them that they'll get out of there.
Plus, do you serve a meal or is it coffee donuts? Or what kind of you get with that?
It's in the food deal down here. Start on time, stop on time. It's interesting. Nobody comes late. Everybody knows we're going to start on time. They know the coffee pot's going to be on at 6:30. And what we do is they start walking through to get their food at 15 till 7. And we start at 7 o'clock. Today men will not commit to something that is open-ended in time. So we determined that we were going to ask them to commit to only 3 months, 3 meetings at each time. Because when we started trying to recruit, they said, well, how long is this going to go on? How long are you asking me to participate in this? And we could say, well, we're going to do it for 3 months. At the end of the third month, you're going to be given an opportunity to renew your commitment or to say whether or not you want it to start or stop. You know, what you want to do. And incidentally, we kill that thing during the summer on purpose to see if anybody would come and ask us to restart it. We just stopped it during the summer. And we waited to see if the guys would start coming, because we said we might start this thing in September back. We wanted to see if in August they start asking us to do it. Well, we started back in September because they began to ask for it. See, I'd rather kill something than to have it die and starve to death. First place, it's easier to start one back up that you have killed than it is to try to breathe. It's an old deal. I'd rather try to cool a zealot than try to breathe life into a corpse. So that's another homemade deal. Okay, let's talk about some of the miscellaneous. We have found in our ministry that the further we get from the concept of one beggar trying to help another beggar find bread, the more problems we have. If we can keep everything in that perspective, that we're a beggar and that we're trying to help another beggar find bread, then we find that God does honor that. You know, in every meeting that you guys attend, there is the prompter. There are the participants, and there is the audience. Right? The prompter, the participants, and the audience. Now let's think about our church service. Normally, who is the prompter? The preacher. Who are the participants? The singers, whoever else is on the platform. And who is the audience? The people in the pew. We explained to our guys, here's another concept. We want the prompter to be the Holy Spirit. We want the participants to be everybody in the room. And we want the audience to be God. And when you walk out of here, when you walk out of one of our meetings, we want you to ask this question. Rather than ask the question, what did I get out of it? You ask the question, what did he get out of it? Did God come out of that smiling? Did he take joy in seeing his guys meet together and talk about his son? Not what did we get out of it as participants, but what did God get out of it was our basis for that. Y'all stand up. You look better than a hammer. I'm not that bad. Let's do that. I'm hot. A lot of hot air emulating from the front. I was afraid we were going to have to find somebody that could open a window, but we got it done, didn't we? You guys are big enough, it just that you couldn't find the hammer, could you? Sit down. Okay, let's look at the program. And this is the program that we follow every time. Coffee at 6:30, food is served at 6:45. At 7 o'clock, we open, and it would just say, hey, welcome, and I usually will do a little tension breaker. See if we can get everybody to kind of relax. It's kind of hard. I have to write something. But then we have a guy just call out of the audience. Just call a guy out of the audience to pray. The other thing we've learned is you don't want a whole parade of people. First place, that room part of the time is packed. So we don't have a parade of people at the front. We'll have somebody that he knows in advance. Then we'll sing three praise songs and have special music. We've been blessed. We've got some guys in our community who can pick a little bit and can play the piano. We got a guy that plays piano, and they have not been able to use their God-given gift like they would like to. So we let them pick, and they come play along, and one guy's got an electric keyboard, and they bring it. And then we've had the guy you may have heard, he'll call every once in a while and just beg me to let him come help us. Old Mark Blakeney will call and say, can I drive up from Louisville and lead you singing with us? Y'all heard Mark before? Yeah, he has to beg hard to get me to let him come. And then somewhere in the conversation you say, Willis, if you don't have any special music, I'd sing special for you. I'd say, well, Mark, what do you pay? We've got a guy at home that's a highway patrol and plays the violin. Just super. We let that guy play occasionally. We just sing, have three courses, and just have a good time. Not a guy in there that can sing. Only a judge. Message. We choose the subjects that we want talked. We tell the guy what we want him to talk on. We call up and say, hey, would you feel comfortable doing a message on this particular subject? And we always make sure that the subject that he is speaking on relates to the original goals or concept in which we formulated the organization, the plan. We make the message fit the original goals. We're not just poking in the dark. at what we're doing. I'll read to you what we've done in the past. The speaker is told he's got 30 minutes. And if he's not finished at 7:15, some guy is going to come up there and pull him out. I think if most speakers, I've not had an exception, if you explain to him the parameters, you tell him what you're doing and what the objective is, he will honor that. On top of that, we got a clock right in front of him. But anyway, then we explain to them the prayer options, and I'll go into that in a minute. Then we do something that I think is rather unique. We then break into discussion groups, and we discuss a question that the speaker has provided in advance to us. And we pick discussion group leaders as they come through the door, some guys that I know can lead a discussion. We break up into discussion groups, and then we discuss the message they have just heard based on a question that he has prepared. And then we ask them to make application of that question and that message to their lives in a small group and discuss that application and then pray.
How many do you try to limit that to? 5?
People? Yeah. It runs from 7 and 8. And I divide it up. We count them as they come in and we select the leaders. And we also, I'll get into that in a minute, but yeah, that's what we do. Then we will take the opportunity at the end of the thing to bring everybody back into the room. We have a form we ask them to fill out, which is basically a attendance slip. We always ask them their opinion on something to get their input. See, again, you're trying to instill in them that this is theirs. That's a part of that ownership deal. And we ask them to come in and do that, and then we'll take 3 minutes in which we just open it up and say, hey, guys, what is the application of what we've just done? What'd you get out of it? And they'll start talking, and we kind of work off of that, and then we'll come to a group application. You guys that are doing small group stuff, this is not that difficult. It's just you're just leading a small group. It's got 50 guys in it, and you do it quickly. You got about 3 or 4 minutes generally to do it.
Do you normally do that yourself? Or yeah, you don't
break
it up?
No, I do it. Yeah, most of the guys got enough sense not to do that. And then we thank them. Yeah, or we're just making them think. Then we thank them, have a closing prayer. Everybody stands up and holds hands and sings, "In My Life Be Glorified." And you ought to see some of those old boys never held hands with anybody else before. We got this big old farmer, and I'm telling you, he backed up to that guy next to him. He didn't want anybody to see him holding that guy's hand. You know what he does? He holds his hand now, and when he gets finished, he turns around and hugs him. Yeah. Well, anyway, that's the way it works. Discussion questions. In the discussion questions, we use a launch question, which will launch the discussion, which is prepared in advance. And then it is supplied by the speaker. And it's written out as the discussion leaders get a copy of it as they come in, as they're picked. And they're actually picked as they come in, because we don't want to have somebody attending just to be a discussion leader. We want them to attend because they want to be a part, and then we'll let them be a discussion leader. I know the guys well enough to know who can do it, which you guys would probably know too. We have a rule that there are no wrong answers in any of that discussion groups. We use a launch question and a guiding question. The launch question launches the discussion and can be prepared in advance. The guiding question, you just have to do it as a leader. We try to encourage everybody to talk, but we don't put anybody in a position where they would feel intimidated. The information card, it's an attendance slip. It also gives us the basis on which to build a database or an attendance base. We always include on it a thing that will give them an opportunity to make a comment. And we make them a part of every decision that we make as for what the future of the organization is through the card. Okay, let's talk about the food. Here's how we do the food, and it's really pretty simple. We have muffins, biscuit and sausage, fruit, juice, and coffee. And when they come in at 15 to 6, they go through the line and go sit down in their chairs. That room will hold about 80 people comfortably. See, what we do is we don't want the focus to be on the food. In the deal that we had before that was a mess, it took about 10 guys to prepare the food because they were cooking eggs and pancakes and all that stuff. Biscuit and sausage can be prepared in advance. In fact, the mayor of our town owns a restaurant. We ask him, he's kind of in the deal, ask him if he'd fix the biscuit and sausage. He finishes at the restaurant cleaning up at 2 o'clock in the morning because that's one of his big nights. And he gets there at 6:15 with the biscuit and sausage and takes part. The guy, hey, is he committed? When you see your mayor, that means something, guys. You might not think about it. When you see your mayor that's paying that kind of price, and we never talk about it. Those guys know it. We don't have to talk about it. He won't take any money. We buy the sausage out of the proceeds. We have the muffins and a fruit plate and the juice. Pay it out of the brown envelope. Keep the receipts. Keep it simple. We get into that deal where we get to where we're worshiping the food. That's where you don't want a woman in charge of the food. Don't let your wife tell you what to do about the food. Let her make suggestions and you play like you're taking them. And then do what you want to.
And then let her make the muffins.
You see, it's not expensive. And we're spreading the cost out. Guys who... We've had wives call and say, Would you let me furnish the muffins next time? My husband's getting so much out of that. I want to furnish the muffins. Another thing that's interesting, this is not in my notes, another thing that's interesting is when we started this deal, we began to hear about the wives who were praying their husbands there.
Amen. That's right.
We began to hear in the community, hey, do you know that, and then call them by name. One of the funniest deals we had was we had this guy who had been a friend of mine a long time, and I knew how his heart beat, but he just doesn't darken the door of the church very often. And I had an old boy come up to me, and he said, I saw David there. What in the world was he doing there? I said, man, he's a good guy. His heart's okay. He just doesn't make many meetings like you guys think he ought to. Saw David down the street. He said, what was old Jack doing there? See, that's the purpose of this deal, is to that cross-pollination between denominations and Christian people. That, and boy, when he did that, when those two guys asked me about each other separately, I knew this deal working. This deal might work. You know, if we get out of the way, Lord, do something with this thing. Okay, let's flip on over. The small group objective is to let Christian men from different churches get to know each other on a personal basis, and also to make application. The other objective of the small groups is to make application. Now, here's how we do this, and it's to assure this. Now, at one of the churches that I attended, they did this same concept of the discussion group after the speaker. But what they had done, they had tables where they invited people. One guy was in charge of a table, and he invited people to come and sit at his table. And then they, as a table, discussed the message afterwards. I like that, except that was in a church. So the same guys met at the same table every month and had the same discussion. So what we do is we number off, and I decide how many discussion groups we have to have, and then we just number off. We can number this deal off, and I'll guarantee you somebody missed their number. And we always say, that guy must be a preacher. And usually it is. Okay, the leaders, they're chosen from the group that attends. They get a question. You ought to give them the question. You know it in advance. You ought to call the guys you think are going to be small group leaders in advance, particularly after you get through two or three sessions, because you know who's going to be faithful. You ought to give them that question the day before, truthfully, so that they don't come in there with a share of the ignorance kind of a deal. They come in there somewhat prepared. How do we handle the prayer? Well, we ask them to pray, but not to pray around in a circle. Why? We don't want the guy who...
You're obligated to
do this. Yeah, we don't want to embarrass some guy that can't pray. So we ask them not to pray around in a circle. We ask them the first time to start with a thank you prayer. It was just like, I got up before we did it, and I basically went through the deal, and I said, now I know some of you guys can't pray. Won't you just take a minute to begin to think about something that you'd like to thank God for? Now, won't we together just thank God for this meeting? So everybody prays together, thank you, Lord, for this meeting. I said, all right, now none of you can tell me again that you cannot pray. All we want is a thank you prayer. So we did that, and we told the leader not to pray a long, theologically correct prayer, but to him to thank God for one thing and get on with it. Again, we didn't want to make anybody feel uncomfortable. The other thing we did, and I don't know why in the world I did this, and some of the guys that were with me about fell out in the floor. I said, before we went to that prayer, first prayer, I said, I also want to make a deal with you guys. Now, some of you guys pray in tongues, and I know it. You're friends of mine. And I'm going to make a deal with you guys. These Baptist guys and these Methodist guys are not going to pray King James if you won't pray in tongues. And I told them, I said, I think that is best practiced. I'm not knocking it. I just believe that is best practiced in the context in which it is understood. And there's three of those guys out there that looked at me and smiled and said, one of them came up to me on Wednesday, the following Wednesday, and he said, Willis, I just want to thank you. You laid down the ground rules. We know what the rules are. We can live by it. We want to thank you for that, because that way there's no misunderstanding about how we're going to do it. And I said, okay, I'm going to tell you. If you catch one of our guys praying King James, you come tell me and I'll reprimand him. And they liked that too. Some other rules. These rules may appear to you to be petty. Okay? Accept it. I accept this may appear to you to be petty. We do not allow anybody to make an announcement. Because if you do, you cannot control your time. Because every church has got something going on they want to brag about. We have that rule. We also have a rule that no preacher or no professional ever takes the microphone, ever takes a position of leadership. Nothing. You know what? They have responded to that. They like it. They can come and relax. They don't have to perform. They can come in their Levi's, then come in their sweats. Hey, if you've got 14, 15, 16 preachers attended this thing over a year's time, without any pressure, they're being invited just like everybody else. And we've told their lay guys, don't you put any pressure on him to come. We want him to come because he wants to support his men and God speaking to him, not us applying any pressure. So we just don't let them take the platform. Where it gets to be tough is when a guy that you really love and you like comes up and he says, hey, I'd like to announce our revival. Had that happen last time. And I said, Mike, I love you, but you're not announcing that revival. Now, you've got your handbills. You stand over at the door. When they walk out, you can pass out your handbills. Because, see, the rule's got to be for everybody. And the fact I love him doesn't have anything to do with it, you know. Another thing I learned was that the guy with the microphone is in control. Let's see, the other miscellaneous rules, no parade of people to the platform. What happens is you get to trying to figure out how politically and socially and within the context of the churches to give every church equal representation. So then you start parading people up there, taking time, and shuffling people up and up, back and forth and back and forth. And we just don't do that. Now, I'll admit, I got a bunch of that community's got a bunch of unique guys in it. Oh, the other thing we told them was that if they ever shared anything, they were shared in one of those small groups, and we found out about it, we was going to snatch them bald-headed. Part of them was already pretty well on the way. It would have been a big task, but you cannot, in those small groups, if you do not have confidentiality, you cannot ever hope to have honest sharing. And we just have a rule that if you do not share anything, period, outside of that small group, confidentiality is what breeds is what promotes confidence in one another.
Well, it's evidently then in your in this place where you're meeting, they have some smaller rooms that you can go into.
What we do is we number these guys off. No, they got a bunch of offices down through there, and we tell them to go down there and find an office and sit down in the floor or sit down in the hall and have the small group. They'll be sitting out in the halls. I mean, the more common it is, it works for us. We don't go into setting up these rooms and sign rooms. Hey, go find your place. Sounds like some deal we've been involved in, doesn't it? Added thoughts. Let me read you the topics. I think it'll probably be helpful for you. You need a mix. I think you need a mix of testimony and speaker. And what we did, we launched our deal with two testimonies. The first meeting, we didn't want to have a speaker. It was just us guys just talking about our ministry, and we had two testimonies. We had two guys. Well, Mark Blackney gave his testimony. And one of the guys in our community that had a real change talked about the example that his father had, I still can remember it, what an example his father had been to him, and how whenever he went over the hill, his father still loved him and still cared about him. Not bad. We've had Tom Williams, who's here, who did a thing on the quiet time. I kind of look at the subjects, you'll see where we're going. We had David Hines, who is here, speak on adversity. We had Noel Funderburk, who does as good a job on the wheel as you'll ever hear do the wheel. Had old Charlie Casebolt, who I think if they mention his name one more time, he's going to be canonized. And he ain't that good. Had Charlie Casebolt do impacting a community or a county. It had to do with vision. Charlie has as good a scope on vision for a community and a county as anybody I know, that I know. And we want him to share it. Had Mike Fisher, who's a cattle buyer from Oklahoma City, talk about the influence that you can have on other men. Jack Combs did a thing on conscience called A Man's Moral Compass. Fly Young talked to us about how God talks to his sheep, the Holy Spirit. Get the idea of where we're going? On our list are a couple of guys in this room that never have been asked yet to talk about being a Christian businessman, man. Old waste places, the role of the Christian layman. The other thing that I have had to do, that we have had to do, is that everybody knows a speaker that they think is good. Stick to your original goals and objectives and pick a speaker who is you feel confident about speaking on a specific subject. Last month, I let one of these guys who had this speaker that he wanted to bring, I told him, I said, you just go arrange it. We found out 5 days before the meeting and after we'd sent out the pub list that he couldn't come. Kind of interesting. Began to pray about it. We decided we thought we might just postpone it, cancel it. And God told me about an old kid that's in one of our Bible studies that has had a miraculous change, and everybody in town knows him. Man, he was so far on over. He's the guy who's told me, and he did it in honesty. He said, I have been so bad that even my sorry friends have quit me. We put out the word that he's going to give his testimony. And then what we did was we gave his testimony. We went down. I ran down to the church on Friday afternoon and gathered up every four spiritual laws we had. We all went over the four spiritual laws and then went off into small groups, talked about his testimony. And the question of the small groups was, if somebody asked you how to become a Christian, how to accept Jesus, what would you say?
Well, I love every speaker you mentioned, and I'd go just for those speakers, but if I'm suspicious of navigators, which a lot of people of our community are, they're going to say every one of those guys is a navigator.
Huh? No, nobody knows they're navigators. I never talk, we don't talk about PK, we don't talk about navigators. I don't want anybody to know those guys have anything to do with navigators.
Have my problem is, are you gonna get tagged with a navigator agenda?
They don't know it. Those guys stand up and talk. They never talk about navigators.
But they don't know it yet.
No, that's a good question. But see, they don't have the background of knowledge you have. Hey, some of these guys just known Christ for 2 or 3 months.
What do you call your group?
Christian men. We don't want any name any. We don't, because you get into name, then you get into specifics. They wanted to call it. They start out wanting to call it the Promise Keepers. Nope. Because then everybody who didn't attend Promise Keepers doesn't think that they're invited. So we just umbrellaed it.
That's a registered trademark.
Well, they ought to register it. Well, okay. The other thing we've done, and I just in the area of another part of information, we don't let anybody give a testimony that hasn't been written out, that we haven't read, and that we haven't been a part, because we're using guys that are just, I mean, fresh off the street, right off the other side. And we don't allow them to give their testimony that it hasn't been written, read, and here are the four points. Now, you guys all know you've been through this testimony deal, but I want to throw out another idea for you. What are the three parts of a testimony? A before, a how, and an after, right? That's it. What we have added is a who. Remember our objective? What we've done is we've got each of those guys to include in their testimony, because everybody comes to Christ because of somebody. So we have asked those guys to include in their testimony a word about the who, because they can relate to the who. And then we'll end that thing part of the time with, hey guys, do you realize that you either are, or you will be, or you can be somebody's who? When I said that, what reaction did you have to that? You get a little chill? That's what we want. We want those guys to have a little bit of chill.
Willis, are you careful about them talking too much about the bad stuff? I mean, you share that with them or not? Is that one of the problems that you have with
them? Yeah. The guy that I had last time, who happens to be a fellow that I have an ongoing, he's in a Bible study I'm in, and he is really, I mean, he's with me here, and he's a little rough around the edges. He was a sparring partner for Tommy Morrison. He was a regional champion in tough man contests. He worked offshore for a number of years. He's a little rough around the edges. And we had a deal with him. Nobody, he's standing right here, and I said, now, Brent, I'm going to be standing real close. And if I put my hand on your shoulder, you shut up. Because he has a tendency to share some things that, out of the context of a small group Bible study, shouldn't be shared. You just open him up. I mean, you just talk to him, he just opens up like a book. He'll tell you things you just don't need to know. You know, and so I'm serious. I stood that close to him, and I told him, I said, Brent, if you say anything, I'm going to reach out and touch you on the shoulder, and that's it. You look and say, what do I say next, Willis? He's a sweet guy. And I'm going to tell you something. I'd take him anywhere, because his heart's pure. He's got a lot of stuff. I mean, he's throwing it out of his life weekly in bushel baskets. He's done some stuff, I mean, you know. But I'm going to tell you. I can't. Probably one of the most important things I've ever been involved in is that small group Bible study with a bunch of guys that nobody else mess with. Now, I'll tell you something else. You don't want to cross one of them. You talk about being protective of one another. They never had anybody before that loved them just like they were. They found love and acceptance in small group Bible study, and that's what I'm going to come to next, in a small group Bible study. And when one of them hurts, they all hurt. And don't ever lay a hand on one of those guys, because when they come ready. Because there's two more in there about like him. And you think it doesn't keep you on your toes leading that Bible study. Okay, what are the benefits? Now let's talk about the problems. Here are some things I think we have done poorly. Is this a new deal for y'all, for us to talk about in a workshop, for somebody to talk about what they did wrong? I think that we have some people who did not like the small groups. They felt intimidated in spite of all of the insulation that we put in there. And they came to us and asked us not to do that, and we decided no, that we would continue to do the vision that we had, and we would continue to do the small groups, even though we were going to lose some people. That we were sorry, we'd give them a second chance, we would talk to them about it, but when it came down to watering down, if you wish, what we felt like God's vision was for this group, we would not do it. We would not sacrifice the group to try to make two or three people comfortable. We would talk to them about it. We would encourage them to come back, but that we wouldn't do that. I've talked about the preacher deal.
Well, part of our problem has been is intimacy. Mm-hmm. And I don't want you to know where I am and what's going on.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure the thing wouldn't have died if you cut it out.
Well, we felt that way. I think also one of the mistakes we made is we didn't train the small group leaders. I made some assumptions about some people that I thought that they walked closer to the Lord than it turned out they did, and they'd come tell me later. And I thought that they, because of some things that I assumed some things about some guy's spiritual walk I should not have done. And I'll tell you what they've done. They have grown to it. But they were not, a couple of those guys particularly were lousy small group leaders. I go around and listen. And two of those guys were lousy small group leaders, but I optioned not to take them out of it, but to try to help them, and I just give them little tidbits and let them stay in there, and they rose to the occasion. But I think if I were going to do it again, I would train the small group leaders. I think in fairness to them. Roy?
Are the groups fixed, or do they rotate every week?
They rotate every month, yeah. We number off. The negative of that is that they don't see the same people every time. The positive of that is they don't see the same people every time. Yeah. Use basically the same leaders. I ran across a guy that I had never really known very well, and he's turned out to be super. He was a college professor out in California, moved back to our community, and he's a super guy.
Does some of your small groups ever get together during the
No, they don't. They're coming from two diverse geographically part of the time to do that.
Is there a problem with intimacy because they don't meet the same guys? I mean, that'd be a little
that's why the interesting thing that has happened is because we're having basically the same people with we pick up about five or six new ones each time. Some guys can't come. Last time we had 12 guys. I knew where they were, and they weren't there. We had six new ones. But what we have seen happen is that as they begin to fellowship with one another, before and after, as they begin to see one another there, then they become more comfortable with each other, and the small groups get better and better and better. And not necessarily because the leadership is improving, that the improvement in the small groups is outstripping the improvement in the leadership, probably. But I think it has to do with the fact that they're used to seeing one another.
I'd be more interested in how do you come up with the questions?
Whoever is doing the message will write the question, and then if I don't like it, I'll rewrite it.
Well, what would be an example on that, Willis? Give us maybe a topic of the talk and maybe an example.
Just a second, I think I have it. This was Jack Combs. He was talking about, make sure I say it right. Yeah, he said conscience, a man's moral compass. And here's a copy of the question sheet that I gave the discussion leaders. It says, what do you think your responsibility is to heal a broken relationship when, as far as you know, you didn't cause the problem? Pretty good question. The follow-up question was, if you needed it, is why is it important? A second question, second launch question, if that one didn't fly, you've got a backup question. Second launch question is, why is it important that broken relationships be healed? We simplified that second question, simplified down, and opened that thing up a little bit wider. You see what we're trying to do? Let's see if I've got another one. I don't think I do. I went up to the computer and printed out some stuff. I don't have another one, and I can't off the top of my head think of one. Okay, let's talk about the benefits real briefly, and I'll spend some time answering your question. We've got going to have about 10 minutes, which is what I'd hoped for. The benefits of it are that we have reached most of our goals. Now, you remember what our goals were? See, as we have talked about, you realize, I'm sure, that our group has reached most of our goals. Out of this thing has come some interesting things. Our preachers, who did not communicate with one another, did not know one another, some of them felt a burden on their own with no encouragement, without our knowledge, to call one another and to begin to meet once a week and pray together.
That's great.
We have had that cross-pollination that we wanted, and I don't know if that's a good term, but that's, you know, of people. And now we have found that in our community, when there is a problem between people, if they have prayed together. See, once you pray with a guy, you never look at him the same again. So if we have a problem between a couple of these guys, it doesn't get to be World War II. You know, first place, they're going to thank the highest of the other one instead of the lowest. You know, see what I'm saying? And that has been a real benefit. The other thing is that not directly because of, but in a sense because of this organization. Two guys out on a construction project got to talking to another guy on the construction project, and he said to them, "My life's a mess." He'd just gone through a divorce, which may be needed, but we won't go into that. And he had just gone through a divorce. He's talking to these two guys that are in our men's deal. And he says something interesting to them. He says, "I need to go back to what I once did with Willis." And these two guys had no more idea what he's talking about, but they knew who Willis was. So they ran me down on the street and said, "What in the world is he talking about?" I said, "Well, long time ago, he was involved in a small group Bible study with me, and he's gone over the hill. He said, "You know what he just did? He just said if we'd come down there and talk to him and pray with him next Wednesday morning at 7 o'clock, there wasn't any reason for him not to have his house open because there wasn't anybody down there. She'd left, and he thought he'd get enough furniture together for all of us to sit on. If you'll come down there with us, we're going to meet and talk." And I thought, well, they're going to have three or four guys. And I go down there, and they have nine. They'd gone out in the community and gathered up some folks. I didn't have anything to do with it. I just show up. You know what they gathered up? Two of those guys are fairly clean. One of those guys that had a marital problem not long ago, big time. We're talking about a third party problem. One of them didn't normally darken the door of a church. Out of that Bible study, they brought one guy. They asked me if they could bring one guy, and I told them no, I didn't want to mess with him. Said, "Can we bring?" And I said, "No, I don't want to mess with him." And I took two steps back, and I thought, "No, that's not my call." I said, "No, you guys pray about it. If you want to bring him, you bring him. We'll mess with him." That's old Brent. That's my guy. I refused to have him in the Bible study. Didn't want to have anything to do with him. That shows how smart I am. Well, anyway, now that's come a Bible study. That Bible study is reaching some guys. It's interesting. I told my wife before I went to the first meeting, I said, "Hun, within an hour," the guy lives where we're meeting, lives on one of the main streets, highways, and I said, "Within an hour, the word will get out that something's going on down at Jerry's house." It met at 7, at 10 minutes after 7, my phone rang at the house, Noreen answered, and my son said, "Mother, where's Dad?" "Well, he's gone." "Where's Dad?" "Well, he's gone to meet with some guy." He said, "What's he doing down at Jerry's?"
She said, "How you know he's not Jerry's?" He said, "Well, Dwayne just called me on a mobile phone. I want to know if Jerry had died." Honest truth. That's honest truth. 2 weeks later, one of the guys came up to one of the guys out of the Bible study. Said, "I saw those cards down at Jerry's." Now, we're talking about from the other side, remember? Said, "I saw all those cars down at Jerry's," and said, "Kind of curious." Said, "What's going on down there?" And they said, "Well, are y'all having a poker game down there like y'all used to?" They said, "No, we're not having a poker game down there. We're playing a high-stakes game." He said, must have been a lot of money, because y'all still there at 6:37 this morning when I came by." Said, "It is high stakes." "Well, what is it?" And he said, "Well, it's about Jesus." And he went, boom, out the door. He wanted to be a part of that poker game. He didn't want to be a part of that other. But I'll tell you what, the fact that Jerry's there and the rest of those guys that are off the other side are there spoke to him. Amen. And out of those guys has come a trickle through that community, a ripple effect. And now we cannot take the men who are coming up and asking us to join that Bible study. I had to turn one down last week. We was working cattle last week, and an old boy asked me, he said, "What are y'all doing down at Jerry's?" And I said, "We're studying the Bible." He said, "Could I come?" And I said, "I'm sorry, I can't let you come, Dwayne, because we don't have room for you. We don't have enough chairs in Jerry's house." By golly, though, I'll tell you what, we got old Jerry up to 12 chairs. He had to go down to we had to steal a part of him. We got enough chairs for him. That's about all he had left. He's got a coffee pot and a dining room table and a bed. The rest of it she took. Well, let's see. One of the other benefits out of this has been that our churches in the western part of that county decide they wanted to go together and have a crusade, a revival, in a school out in the western part. And I think, I don't take any of the credit for it for this group, but I think the fact that those preachers were getting to see one another probably made it easier to talk about it. And then whenever they needed to train counselors for this thing, they came and asked one of our guys to come out and train counselors for their deal. So he got to go out there and talk to 15 people that he'd never get to talk to any other way about basic discipleship and how to witness and how to share your faith and how to counsel the crusade. Now, that's a side benefit. I can't say that specifically is the reason, but I believe that it has something to do with it. The other thing that we did and that we have tried to do in that group is we have tried to have two or three guys who have a rare bird net. And when we look out into that audience about third or fourth meeting, we find somebody that is really hungry and kind of a rare bird. We get him with that rare bird net and see if we can't help him walk a little bit faster and a little bit further in some way or another. The other thing that's come out of that is I noticed that those guys have a tendency when they see one another at some other meeting or out in the community or in a restaurant, they look at one another and smile and they wave. And I'd also noticed that after some of the Bible study and some of the other stuff, that they'll be out eating lunch together. You know what they're talking about? They're not talking about coon hunting. And they're not talking about fishing. They're talking about Jesus. Questions?
How long has it been going?
The first meeting was in January of 96. Oh, by the other thing, we may kill it. We may kill it. We may quit it.
Turn it back to churches.
Let's see where it goes. We've reached our objectives, and we don't want it to just to get to be another meeting. That's probably wrong. That's probably wrong. But we're going to always have the door open. That if God impresses us not to do it anymore, that it's not something we've got to do for our own ego or to be successful. Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't mean that in the sense that you've all been involved in ministries that should have been killed instead of let die. And we're still having 50, 60 guys. Oh, the other thing we've been able to do, we have been able to recruit blacks to that thing. We've got a black preacher in town that everybody likes and loves, and he's gone out and he helps us. We got some guys that we call. It was guy off a guy, the first meeting. So we some of us knew some black guys. We called and said, "Hey, you know, won't you come join us? We need y'all. What do you need us for? Because you're all excited, you know." I told one of them, I said, "You can sing. I'd stand next to you, and you'd make me sound better." Worked. Somebody, I'm sorry. Go ahead, David, whatever you want to. Shoot.
I forgot.
It's okay. Jerry does that a lot, too.
Did you say something about a mail-out board?
Yeah, we send a card out each time to the people who are on our mailing list. Start out with a list of prospects, but not many.
because we wanted it to be man on man. We wanted it to be a personal invitation. I've had in the paper one time. I know the guy owns a newspaper down there, and he put this ad in for nothing. And
that's what it was worth.
That's what it's worth. That's what he's worth, too. Yes, sir.
What you have, Willis? What you have?
Great. Your job is to tell me to back up.
Could you go back to the comment on, in the model format, you have to explain the prayer options and things like that?
Yeah, I go in there, and each time I will tell them that they're not, because we got the new guys, I'll tell them that they're not going to be expected to pray, only pray if they want to. That we would prefer that they pray thank you prayers if it's their first time there, and not to be intimidated. And we'll generally tell them, saying, all those guys that think they're spiritual in there and want to pray those long prayers, they're really not. You're okay with them. We keep it light. We keep it easy. I apologize to some of you guys who want a more structured environment, but it's working. Another question?
Have you seen any opposition from the churches in the area?
They can't figure out where to hit. You don't have much problems out of a church if there are lay people involved. The other thing is, you don't have much problem out of a church if those guys are coming out of that thing alive and coming back to church and wanting to help the church. That's the reason that you don't have any other agenda. You don't have any competition over projects and that kind of thing with the church. Those guys go back to church and they're better church members. You know? Just a second.
You mentioned something earlier, and I wanted to just share something I got from J. Vernon McGee. It says, when you get to heaven, you will likely view many folk there who will be a surprise to you, but don't act so surprised or even show a care, for they might be just as surprised.
I need that. Yes, I need that. I'm sorry.
Pray songs.
Yeah, okay. Nothing but pray songs. We have courses. Yeah, courses. We have a song sheet that we pass out. No music on it. None of those guys can read music. Some of them can't read the words. And we do the pass that out. We do stuff that's common. And the other thing is that we try to do the same six or eight songs, and they're beginning to learn it. Those that didn't know them in their churches are beginning to learn the songs.
Did you just play the song off the cassette?
No, we have the guy with the guitar and an electric piano, and they play. They're kind of pickers and singers. Somebody else, I'm sorry. This is a record for me. We're going to finish 5 minutes early if you don't come up with another question. Jerry, don't have a question that I can't answer. By the way, I'd like to introduce to you Jerry. Picked me up when nobody would talk to me and when I was way over on the other side, and he built into my life.
Amen.
That's my spiritual father.
Amen.
When he got sick of me, they passed me off to Gene Ward. I owe a great deal of gratitude to Jerry because he loved me when I really wasn't very lovable. And he spent time with me when I know he had better things to do.
I had a rare bird net.
More like a buzzard. Thank you. I appreciate you guys coming. We'll make you one other offer. I put my name, purposely put my name on the work handout. If you ever want to talk to me about it, call me. I'm in the weekly newspaper business, and sometimes I'm under pressure, and sometimes I can't talk. But I'll call you back, and if I can't talk to you right then, I'll tell you up front I can't talk. I'll share with you who I think would be a good speaker. There are people in your area that will do it. In this room, there are five or six guys that would be just love to come risk their reputation with you.